You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Lowcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to episode 55 of Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, if he was an Imperial TIE fighter pilot, he would refuse to polish his helmet. Mark, how you doing?
Sorry, I was too busy polishing my helmet. But that's because I'm a Rebel pilot. So, you know, in fairness, actually, it's completely the other way around. Rebel pilots never polish their helmets because we do like them dirty, whereas the Imperials like them nice and clean and shiny.
See, got you in one. How's it going, man? How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, long time no speak.
Yeah, it's been ages, isn't it? Ages. Yeah.
Ages and ages and ages.
Two brooms ago.
Yeah, at least 15 minutes, maybe 20, in fact. So there you go, pulling the curtain a little bit back on our recording schedules for the folks.
Well, we thought we did an episode earlier in the week last Tuesday, as you would have heard it if you're listening now. But we had so much news to get through, we didn't even get close, so we thought, let's do two episodes this week. So I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but you've got us twice this week. So we're going to dig in straight away to our major topic of discussion. The first half of the show anyway. Star Wars Squadrons, they released a short called Hunted, and in a word, it was awesome. What did you make of it, Mark?
I was just like, wow, this is awesome, and slightly blown away. I kind of sat there watching it thinking, why can't we get a series like this? Quality of it. I mean, the rendering on those starfighters and that was awesome. It plonks you right down in the middle of a battle. And for those who are kind of really interested in Star Wars Squadrons, I think it gives you a really good idea of the time and the vibe on what we're going to expect from the game. It kind of reminded me very much of those cinematic trailers we got for The Old Republic about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Which, again, were really, really awesome. And visually just stunning. But I mean, this was just great. A nice length. It wasn't too short, wasn't too long. As a Rebel pilot, it was interesting because I kind of get the vibe on this one. The New Republic pilots, as they are in the short, they kind of almost skewed as being slightly the bad guys in this a bit. Did you get that?
Oh, big time. Yeah.
So yeah, I just thought it was the graphics and the score to me sounded very Rogue One, especially as the TIE Interceptor's failing in power and he's going into the lake. It's just like they've just lifted something directly out of the Rogue One score. So very kind of cinematic and emotional.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, every element, it nails it. I mean, John Knoll was involved and seemed, in the interview that was on StarWars.com, seemed to be very excited about being involved. He talks about playing X-Wing back in the 90s, and so clearly excited to be involved with this. But yeah, you're right. The music is such a huge part of it. And I think it has been for Star Wars gaming for a long time. I mean, one of my playlists when I'm writing is old Star Wars gaming music, and it's all sorts of old stuff, like really old Republic Commando and all sorts of random bits. There's a bit of the Star Wars Christmas album mixed in there, Christmas in the Stars, and there's all sorts of stuff. But it's kind of fun, and even though those early ones were like MIDI versions, some of the music was awesome, and you kind of think, oh, I wish I could do an updated version with like a modern sort of technology, or even with an orchestra. And this is another one, you know, Old Republic had the soundtrack with it. Well, they're doing a score for Fallen Order, I think, is coming out, I believe, and that's one to hunt down. And this, again, feels like there's stuff that's going to be in and around Squadrons. But visually, yeah, you're right. I mean, it really reminded me hugely of, obviously, the Scarif battle from Rogue One. It had that vibe about it. But even more so, the Junkyard chase from Force Awakens, it had that sort of real fast-paced move about it. There's elements of it that feel like they will sort of point towards things that you can do in the game. Like, for example, when the Interceptor hits the atmosphere, flames up, and then the X-Wing's on his tail and sends the missile after him. And he is able to sort of intercept the missile and turn it back on itself. So the X-Wing has to blow the missile up. Just little things like that, I think, will be options. I don't know, but it kind of feels like there'll be options within the game. But just the pace of it, the movement of it, you know, when Star Wars gets it right, it just, it kind of nudges you forward 3 or 4 inches on your seat. So you're always on the edge of it, because like, oh wow, what's going to come next, you know? And he did have a bit of that Independence Day chase down the canyon vibe about it when he takes out the X-Wing. It did feel like the New Republic guy was almost the villain of this piece. Clearly he wasn't, but it kind of gives you that nice split of half the gamers are going to want to be Imperials and half the gamers are going to want to play New Republic. So it's a nice little setting up the split. It's obvious that the baby face is the rebel guy. You know what I mean? They're just setting it up quite neatly. So I picked up on that as well, yeah.
For shorts, basically set around, like you said, the Imperial Dockworld, which is on a planet called Varshar, which I don't think we've ever seen before.
No, I'm not aware of it, no.
I mean, it's like one of those mid-rim planets. It's set clearly after the Battle of Endor because of the reference to like the end of the war and stuff like that. But you do follow a character called Varko Gray, and he is the leader of Titan Squadron. Kind of like similarly to Battlefront 2, where you kind of played Iden Versio. And from what I understand from reading some of the articles and I think on Stars.com and what have you, at least the battle itself, this battle, is definitely going to be kind of like referenced or referred to in the gameplay. Bears some kind of reckoning because he didn't actually make it back onto the Imperial Star Destroyer before it flew off into hyperspace.
That was so dramatic. That moment was brilliant.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I mean, could you imagine, actually, if you were that pilot and, like, you're gunning it full bore to try and get onto that hangar and then you just see the bloody thing just kind of, like, slip into pseudo motion when it's gone into hyperspace.
Yeah.
At least when you're in an X-Wing, you're fairly safe from the knowledge that you've got a hyperspace capability and you can just kind of punch it and hopefully catch up with them if you know their next destination. But on a TIE fighter, you're totally stuffed.
Especially in that era. I mean, we're still in the OT era. I know it's after Jedi, but we're still within that sort of OT era stretch of time, aren't we? Which is sort of 10, 15 years if you sort of want to encompass Rebels as being nearer to A New Hope than it is to the Clone Wars era. You know, it's sort of starts around about there, doesn't it? And now it kind of feels like it's just running a little... Well, it does sort of run a little bit after Endor. The technology-wise, I mean, you get to the First Order sort of another 30 years on, and those TIE fighters do have hyperdrives and shields, and they're much more substantial vehicles than the ones the Empire were pumping out that were just tin cans, really, that could fly. And, I mean, one thing that came over brilliantly in this was just how fast and how, like, scary fast those interceptors were. You know, you see him scooting around, the feel on the yoke just feels amazing, and when he sort of guns it forward you can just feel the acceleration. But interceptors were always like that, and I mean he takes a few hits, more than a few, you know, so they obviously take a bit of a thump.
That's what I noticed, yeah.
You know, whereas I'm still working my way through Alphabet Squadron at the moment, and you know, you sort of realize that throughout that squadron you've got, you know, your X-Wings, we all know what the X-Wings can do. The U-Wings are fast and they're powerful and sturdier and can carry more people. The A-Wings are the fastest ones, but the weakest as well. They, you know, they can't really take much of a hit. So, you know, and then this, it's X-Wing versus Interceptor. You kind of in your head put X-Wing and TIE Fighter together, put A-Wing and Interceptor together. You know what I mean? It was an interesting pair-up. So for him to do what he does at the end of near the end of this short was quick thinking. And I hope that translates to the game. I think it probably will.
It gave me that kind of a slight nostalgia of seeing, I think it was a second trailer for Force Awakens, when you suddenly see the X-Wings kind of like fly over the lake over Takodana.
Yes.
And yeah, then when he does that big turn and he brings up a massive wave out of that jet stream, I thought that was really cool. As the X-Wing pilot is forced to kind of like have to pull out and stuff. It was clever. It was a clever bit of storytelling, I think, as well.
Yeah. And using the environment to their advantage as well. I mean, obviously in the canyon, he's, you know, you see the Star Destroyers breaking up and coming down, which was a cool touch. When that suddenly happened, I was like, wow, didn't expect that. That was brilliant. You know, and they're dodging all of that. So that's enough. And then he dives into the canyon. That's tricky enough as well. Then he's got the X-Wing on his tail and he still manages to evade it and then uses the water, the environment, to his advantage. So there was lots of elements that combined to make his victory so good. But I didn't expect at the end, you know, when he's sitting on the beach, you're thinking, they're not going to come back for him. It's the Empire. But I suppose it's that new era of, and again, Alphabet Squadron's laying it out really well. I'm very much enjoying that. They're depleted forces now. They haven't got enough. I mean, what's the crew for a Star Destroyer? It's about 200,000, isn't it? You know, they haven't got enough people to run. It's huge, isn't it? They haven't got enough people to run the Star Destroyers. They're low on crew. So I'm thinking with this one, actually, when you think it through with some logic, if they could come back and pick him up, that's a sensible thing. But also another question as well. Who won that battle? Because you kind of get the vibe. Obviously, the Empire leave, they get out of there, they jump to hyperdrive because they're getting their arse handed to them, so they need to back away, which isn't their kind of style. Oh, another retreat. You know, he says it, doesn't he? But then it is the Imperial forces that come back and pick him up. So you're thinking, well, that's a question. Do they get a victory over the rebellion, or the New Republic in that moment? Because they're the ones that come down to pick him up. It's intriguing enough to go, well, I mean, I'm all in for this game. Can't wait. Like we said at the end of the other episode, totally doing Fanta Squadron. It's definitely one to think about.
I'm Anthony Daniels, and you are listening to Fanta Tracks. Well done.
Disney are giving us the opportunity to vote on which lightsaber next arrives at Dock On Doors at Galaxy's Edge. And there's quite a good choice. There's an interesting choice of blades. There's Anakin Skywalker from Attack of the Clones. There's Cal Kestis' saber from Jedi Fallen Order. Ezra's and Kanan's from Star Wars Rebels. Qui-Gon's saber from The Phantom Menace, and Lord Korvac's from Vader Immortal. So it's a good spread of sabers. At the moment, Cal Kestis is in the lead with Qui-Gon in second place. Which one would you be going for right now, Mark?
I've always liked Qui-Gon's. It's really quite understated, and I've always liked that. But at the same time, the Lord Korvac's hilt is just immense. It's got like shades of a broadsword about it. I was actually quite surprised when I voted, because I voted on Qui-Gon's, and I was quite surprised that actually Cal Kestis' lightsaber was in the lead. And in fact, when I first voted, when this first came up, he was a lot closer in the voting to Cal. Didn't quite think that it had the appeal. It's a hilt that is damaged and stuff, and if you get the rendering right and it all looks correct and authentic, it probably will look really cool.
Agreed. I mean, I picked the same as you. I picked Qui-Gon's. I think it's a great looking saber. I love the sort of the hand grip feel. It feels like you wouldn't lose it. But yeah, so I picked Qui-Gon. Lord Korvac's looks very Romulan to me. It's got that kind of Romulan.
It does. Yeah, I
feel.
Was going to say it almost looks like the Romulan emblem.
Yeah,
I think it's a Tal Shiar emblem. Yep. Check me out. I've been watching Star Trek recently.
And I agree with Cal. Cal's saber is a nice looking saber. The sort of the damaged element is kind of interesting visually as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But the one thing about the Cal Kestis lightsaber, I mean, at least during the course of Fallen Order, is that that's one of those things that you can cosmetically change. If that does win, I'd be interested to see if they allow for different options. The main thing with Fallen Order is that you pick up like lightsaber hilt components and you pick up cosmetic change of clothes. That's basically all the kind of stuff you pick up, really. So each different part, like the pommel, the hilt, the emitter and all that, made out of different metals. And as far as I'm aware, they don't actually have any real strategic importance. I think it is purely just a cosmetic thing. But it gave you the option to come up with these different iterations. A bit like you can actually do when you go to Black Spire Outpost anyway.
It's nice to see Rebels getting some love as well with Ezra and Kanan's. We did debut on Fanta Tracks the spread showing Kanan's lightsaber from the lightsaber collection, which is coming very soon from Insight Edition. So it's good to see that. Anakin's saber kind of feels like we're very familiar with it anyway, but this is the Attack of the Clones one. I'm assuming this is the one that gets damaged in the droid factory then, that gets sort of chopped in half.
That's the Attack of the Clones one. It's you kind of see the kind of lineage of like Anakin's lightsaber. Again, it's still very much a camera flash type feel about it. I mean, and the one thing that I've always struggled with, at least, and maybe I'm wrong with how I hold it, but at least those Graflex lightsabers, the ones that I've got, quite a few lightsaber hilts that actually are quite uncomfortable to hold and actually duel with. The one that Qui-Gon Jinn has is the ones that I kind of see a lot more of the Silver Sabers lightsaber group, the guys that and girls that we kind of sometimes troop alongside. They have very cylindrical, very unadorned kind of lightsaber hilts like that. The emitter blocks and all the power on buttons and stuff like that can get like in the way when you're trying to do all that fancy kind of stuff that these guys do.
There's been some criticism that there isn't yet a Leia or Rey Sentinel Saber available. What do you think on that? I understand the concern that there isn't one yet, but it does to me feel like that's certainly going to be something that comes down the road. Is that just a case of people being impatient, or do you think that's an oversight by Disney? Do you think they should have maybe made at least one of those sabers available this time around?
I think they should have definitely made Rey's Sentinel Saber available. Yeah. I think that is, I'm surprised actually we're almost getting to like 1 year on since the release of Rise of Skywalker and that hasn't been released. Maybe that's coming. I mean, I really like the Leia hilt, and I think actually from a display perspective, it would complement having Luke's ROTJ hilt and then Leia's one next to each other. I'm quite surprised about the lack of Rey's lightsaber. That might just be down to a manufacturing production thing. Like maybe that hilt was not released in terms of like images to say Hasbro early enough, or maybe those shots near the end were done quite late in the day or picked up as like reshoots or something.
Yeah, I mean my head, logical head, and there's not much of it, but what little there is, thinks that there's the likelihood that Hasbro probably are looking at doing a Ray Saber. And so why would Disney release a Ray Saber at the park if Hasbro are releasing a Ray Saber in the Force FX line, for example? So I don't know if they are, but just thinking Disney will go, well, Galaxy's Edge gets these sabers and Hasbro, you release these sabers. And at some point, they'll be available in both formats if you like. But just thinking outside the box a little bit, because there's so much stuff, like we've been saying over the last few episodes now, we've got Bad Batch coming, we've got Cassian coming, we've got Kenobi coming, we've got Mando coming. There's a lot of stuff coming now. Plus the games, Tales from the Galaxy's Edge, Fallen Order's got a sequel coming out, Squadrons is coming. So there's lots of sort of little, within Star Wars, lots of independent IPs, if you like, within the brand.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff coming out. So there's probably, well, there's got to be a sort of a route map for what they want to release in terms of product. You know, they don't just pluck them out of thin air.
Makes
it's all
sense.
Thought through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think somewhere down the line, there's a logical reason, not just they don't want to make it, because goodness knows they know they will sell a Leia Saber. They know they'll sell a Rey Saber. The cosplayers will want them as much as anybody else, plus general collectors who like sabers. There's every reason to make those sabers. I just think there's got to be a logical reason why they've not done them yet. They're saving them for something.
That might be it. They are maybe saving them for something. Or maybe they're just seeing what the demand's like. Because, yeah, it's interesting that Hasbro put out, like, they put out the Revan Saber Hilt and then the Sidious one, especially the Revan one. That's very much going to be focused at a certain type of collector, I think. The age of Revan in terms of, like, when he first appeared in the Expanded Universe and also how he is still a Legends character. But yet they've re-released him as a Gaming Greats figure and a standard Black Series figure. That sounds logical to me, mate.
You're listening to Fantatrax. Flip through the galaxy of literature with Cannon Fodder hosts Brian Cameron, Matt Booker, Mark Newbold, and Mark Mocaster.
Count me in.
Spin round the rim with Desert Planet Discs. Your musical journey through the space lanes with your hosts, Carl Bayless and Greg Robertson.
The hottest tunes this side of Mos Eisley.
Get the latest news, interviews, reviews, and much more on Making Tracks with your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
Like an Ewok battle wagon out of control.
Join hosts Claire Henry and a rotating panel of guest hosts for the podcast that's full of hope.
Hope.
Planet Leia.
I love you.
I know.
It's time to head south with the Fantha from Down Under, Adam O'Brien.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
Start your engines with Paul Naylor and Mark Newbold as they lift the hood on starships, airspeeders, swoops, capital ships, and more from across the cosmos. And for everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com. For Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
The last week, we had a bit of a chat about Ewan McGregor and some of the comments that he said about how he was looking forward to working on Kenobi more than he was episode 2 and 3. Interestingly, Liam Neeson has been on SiriusXM and he was talking about how much he enjoyed working on episode 1 and in particular with a certain cast member.
Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. That's gotten you know, the Star Wars fans, I mean, it's such a controversial movie in the Star Wars pantheon. What do you say to defend that movie?
That's a very, you've been very diplomatic there. I know a lot of fans and critics didn't like it. And
wait, I liked it. What's the problem?
Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar Binks,
came
in for a lot of criticism. Point where it really hurt his career. And I have to say, when I was making that film with Ahmed Best as Jar Jar Binks and Ewan McGregor as the young Obi-Wan Kenobi, he was probably one of the funniest guys and talented guys I have ever worked with.
Wow.
I remember calling Ed LaMotta, God rest him, my old ex-agent at ICM, and saying, listen, I think I've just worked with the new Eddie Murphy. And I still believe that. Apparently, I was told that Ahmed went to one of the, one of those big Star Wars conventions, wherever it was, San Diego or somewhere like that, recently, in the past 2 years. And The crowds went wild. Ahmed was introduced. The crowds went wild, gave him a standing ovation. Ahmed was crying his eyes out. It was a beautiful thing to hear. I wasn't there. I was told this by a couple of people. It was beautiful.
Right.
So, look, I'm very proud of the film. I got to be a Jedi.
You are a Jedi.
Got to play with those wonderful lightsabers and stuff. And it was terrific, Andy. It really was, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Ahmed Best truly is one of the funniest guys. He had all of us in stitches of laughter, including George Lucas. And then wham, bam, the film comes out and he's attacked, personally attacked by fans and critics and for whatever reasons.
Crazy,
but,
crazy.
I like the movie.
Well,
he couldn't have been more effusive in his praise for Ahmed Best. He really did go out of his way to not only say how much he enjoyed being part of the Phantom Menace and how much he enjoyed it, which he clearly did, because, I mean, you know, we got him back for the Clone Wars, and he's, I don't remember ever hearing anything negative from him, to be fair, given the career he's had and Oscar nominations and massive films and parts, and obviously Taken came after Phantom and all the big things he's been in. But he really went out of his way to sort of praise Ahmed Best to the point of saying, you know, he believed, he'd said to his former agent, that he could be the next Eddie Murphy. I mean, that's no small feat. Eddie Murphy has just won an Emmy for Saturday Night Live, by the way. Yeah, he's saying how proud he was to be a part of it, how much he enjoyed the stuff with the lightsabers, and it just sounded like he
had. Kind of genuine. Yeah,
very, you know, like he had a lot of fun on set. And you made the good point of how Ewan had only said last week how much he's looking forward to doing the new one. And whilst he obviously enjoyed doing 2 and 3, you know, and they were what they were, it feels like Ewan had the most fun on Phantom Menace. And maybe by what we've read here and heard from Liam Neeson, and the article's on Fanthru if anyone wants to go and find it in the show links, maybe part of the big fun was Liam was having a good time, and that sort of translated to a lot of other people as well.
I think it's a shame, really, that we only got one episode with Qui-Gon, because I think Qui-Gon is such an interesting character, and Liam Neeson is an awesome actor. I mean, I just wonder maybe he wasn't really paying attention to the fan reaction. I just kind of maybe get that feeling that he might have been slightly more removed from possibly, you know, the fan reactions. It's not really like affected him. But yeah, I mean, it's a really nice, really complimentary on Ahmed Best, and bearing in mind that it's over 20 years since Phantom Menace came out, the actors are still happy to talk about it. And I mean, I think it would be great. I would love to get Liam Neeson back for a Disney series. Could you imagine? Could you imagine an episode of Kenobi or something which actually featured Liam Neeson? That would be amazing.
It would. And weirdly enough, I mean, Ewan's aged well. Hayden Christensen's aged well. You know, those prequel trilogy guys have all aged very well. Natalie Portman was so much younger, so obviously she looks older, because she was only even by the time of Sith, she was still a sort of a teenager, really, so barely into her 20s. So obviously she's aged differently. They were more mature already in that sense. But that being said, you know, Neeson, it's all over this, isn't it? You know, how much he enjoyed it. And he probably is my favourite Jedi character out of them all anyway. I think just the way, what he brought to it. And he was the big star, you know, when they announced Phantom Menace casting back in the day, you only knew Natalie from Leon, the professional. You only knew Ewan really from
Trainspotting.
You had Trainspotting and Shallow Grave. That was it, really. He'd done a couple of things on telly. I think he'd done some Dennis Potter stuff on telly, like his uncle had done years before, but not a huge amount of stuff. So he wasn't a mega star. He was a known actor. Like, you could look back and argue Mark Hamill was known because he was on General Hospital and he'd done a few bits, but he wasn't a star by any measure. And neither was Harrison Ford. You kind of equate Harrison Ford's role in the original movie to kind of where Neeson was. It's that sort of slot. But Liam Neeson, he'd been Oscar nominated for Schindler's List. He was Darkman. He'd done stuff. We knew who Liam Neeson was before The Phantom Menace. So he was the first, really, you know, if you look at Empire and Jedi, no megastars came into Empire or Jedi. They're megastars to us now, but no big names. It's not like they brought Eddie Murphy into Return of the Jedi, or, you know what I mean, or a big name suddenly cropped up in Jedi. They were adding character actors like Billy Dee Williams and people like that were coming in and inhabiting the roles. But Liam Neeson comes in and he's a big star. So like you say about him being slightly removed, I mean, it's nice that he heard about, he's clearly talking about Celebration there, not San Diego. But, you know, he's talking about the reaction that Ahmed Best gets. How cool that, one, that gets back to him anyway, that he even hears about that. He's obviously kept his ears open to sort of follow a little bit what happened to Ahmed, because he more than alludes to any. The same thing happened to Jake Lloyd, but of course it was slightly different reasons why. I always hope that he'll sort of get back to a place where he can come back into the Star Wars fold, if you like, and be welcomed like he should be, like Hayden has been, and now like Ahmed has been, and then going to do Jedi Temple Challenge, which was great fun, must have enjoyed the heck out of that. You know, you kind of hope that, and Hayden doing the voice work in Rise of Skywalker, and maybe some stuff in Kenobi, fingers crossed. You know, okay, Qui-Gon went out of the story a lot earlier than that, but you're right, he doesn't look that much different. You know, if they put the wig and the beard on him, I don't think it would take a lot of effort to basically make him look like he did in Phantom Menace. And Ewan, it's a more of a stretch because it's 20 odd years ago now, same age as me. You're not going to make me look like I did when I was, you know what, 27 or whatever, with the best will in the world, or even ILM doing the effects. But Ewan, they probably could. So there's some options there. There really is. He's that to me, beyond it just being nice comments, and yeah, I'm proud of that film. $1 billion film, what's not to be proud of? You know, that sort of thing. It kind of opens the door a little bit to, well, maybe if there's a way of doing something, you know, if you have a Yoda and Luke on Acto type scene in Last Jedi with Ben communing with Qui-Gon on Tatooine, which is what Yoda says at the end of Revenge of the Sith, after all. We need to talk because there's some stuff you need to know and there's things you need to learn. And I've been talking to Qui-Gon, you know, from the netherworlds of the Force or whatever. You know, so Yoda's talked to Qui-Gon. Who knows? Maybe it's possible.
Hello, I'm Ahmed Best and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
So it's been a few weeks, but we finally got round to our latest listener's question. We've wanted to do this for a couple of weeks, but it's been so busy, but we've made time for it. And here it is. It's from Greg Alonso, faithful Fantha Tracks listener. And the question is, and it's to both of us. Hello, I have a question I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on. Although different in style and type of comedy, using the new Star Trek Lower Decks series as the closest thing we have to hindsight, were Lucasfilm / Disney right to cancel Star Wars Detours? Is it more important to keep the Star Wars universe vibe reasonably consistent and broadening it, as opposed to the Family Guy and Robot Chicken specials, which replayed the existing content with a comedic twist, even at the cost of never releasing Detours, or getting a good quality comic version of the broader Star Wars universe, like Star Trek now has with Lower Decks? Would the Detour Star Wars universe, or any comedic version of Star Wars, have compromised or lessened the Star Wars magic you get across the movies, comics, games and other series? Or was Detours just caught up in some kind of distribution, production, multi-company, contractual ownership mess? There's loads of slashes in there, but I think you can pick that up. Due to the sale of Lucasfilm, was it just unlucky to find itself the victim of the resulting legal wrangling that it may have taken to get it to market, including international merchandise markets? So basically, could Star Wars do a comedy-style Star Wars and not weaken or dilute the broader canonical, if you want to call it that, or continuity story, like Star Trek are doing with Lower Decks? I don't know how much you've seen of Lower Decks. I do a podcast called Making Treks, and we're going to talk about Lower Decks this week, actually. I'm loving it, and I think it's a good move for Trek. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think time and distance has a lot to do with it, I think. I mean, if they were to release, let's say, a Star Wars comedy series like Detours about the sequel trilogy now, it does run the risk of undermining that trilogy. But then when I think with time and that, you can look back at stuff like the original trilogy, for instance, or even the prequel trilogy, for that matter now, I think everybody can kind of like look at it from the quirks and its charm and make something more of it and maybe make it a bit more comedic. With respect to Detours, I think it's very peculiar to get to a point where you've got a whole series of a show finished, if not more than a whole series, for the whole thing to get shelved completely like that. I mean, just basically, just down to the fact that most shows need to make their money back.
It wouldn't have been cheap, would it? It definitely wouldn't have been cheap.
I don't think so, no. I mean, you know, the first seasons can always be quite costly just to set up and get the animation pipelines sorted and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, I can remember the clips that I saw. It was a little bit more snarky, a little bit kind of like, it played on that whole Princess Leia teen angst kind of thing. I think I probably could only probably watch a bit of it. When Lucasfilm was sold to Disney, there was kind of this hard reset on a number of different things, a number of different properties. And you know, we saw animation series ending and we saw games cancelled. And then obviously, you know, the expanded universe become Legends and that. And everything was all about, you know, focusing on continuing this saga. And I think what Disney wanted was they wanted to keep it very clear the kind of tone that they wanted. I mean, for instance, even in the Disney parks, suddenly, you know, you didn't get dancing stormtroopers and stuff like that. In 10, 15 years' time, there might be more comedians and the writers who grew up with the sequel trilogy might look back and might start looking at adding in sketches into, like, you know, Saturday Night Live and stuff like that. or Family Guy. But I think there's a difference, isn't there? There's a difference between set something up and make fun of it in a good-humoured kind of way because you love that show. If they put it on Disney Plus, and I don't think they will, but if they put it on Disney Plus, I mean, I would probably sit down and watch it. And it would give us something to talk about, you know, discuss this further. A little bit. Yeah. I mean, but like I said, it's one of those things. It's the last little bit of like the Lucas era that is still hanging around that some people always remember that actually, you know, it's out there, but no one's ever seen it.
Detours felt very much like it was riffing off the original trilogy. And if they, and of course it came before the sequel trilogy, and it would have, I'm sure at some point, I don't remember seeing stuff that touched on the prequel trilogy, but if you remember before Force Awakens started and then all the recent sort of grumbling and negativity built, the prequel trilogy was almost persona non grata. People weren't talking fondly about Ahmed and, you know, and people like, you know, Ewan and Liam Neeson weren't overtly saying, I loved it and it was great and it was great fun. And the general cinema-going public, I mean, within the fandom, people loved it and people didn't, and that's fine, but... You know, and but there were sort of ructions, and it eased when the next lot came out because then people had something else to grumble about because that's just the nature of people. I think the original trilogy is far more embedded into the zeitgeist and popular culture than anything that's
absolutely
come since. Star Wars Empire and Jedi. It's like they're secure enough and confident enough in their excellence that you really can rip on them. You can joke about them. You can do a Family Guy or a Robot Chicken or a Phineas and Ferb or whatever you want to do. And I think Detours would have worked. One, it was very, apparently one of the reasons they've said they won't release it was because it was, the jokes were very contemporary of the moment. It was almost like a Muppets Tonight kind of thing. It sort of worked in the moment.
Yeah.
So there'd be a lot of cultural references from 2011, 2012 that if you were 8 then and you're 16 now, for example, you wouldn't get half of them. Well, we would, because we're that much older, but kids who they're probably aiming this at will be like, you know, they wouldn't get the references.
It's like when you watch older episodes of, well, The Simpsons or Family Guy.
Yes.
It's the same thing. You know, they both have a satirical moments. And because we're in the UK, there's references to TV personalities and events out in the US that actually go over my head.
But I suppose, you know, it's like if you're watching, I don't know, if there's something crazy happens on, pick a show, Love Island, let's say. And in the moment, because we all know how fast things move now, earlier this year, everyone was talking about and watching Tiger King. I haven't heard anyone talk about Tiger King for months. And yet when that was out, all you heard was Tiger King, isn't it awesome? Yes, it was, actually. I watched it. It was really, really good. As soon as it was finished, it was done. That was it. I think culturally and sort of pop culturally, we do move forward way quicker than we ever used to because now,
We
said on the last show, you know, how many streamers are there? How many shows are there? How much is there to watch? You'll never fit in everything you want to watch. You know, you won't live long enough to fit it in or read all the stuff you want to read or get through all the comics you want to get through. I got a friend who came around, actually my brother-in-law, came around the other day, you know, and up in the collection room and I was showing him the different things. And he says, you know, how often do you read these comics? Do you ever read them? When I was a kid, they'd get read, you know, between, you know, month to month, it was the only comic I was collecting. They'd get read 6 or 7 times. I says, a comic now gets read once, put in the bag, put away. I'll probably never physically touch the thing again. It's a one-time only gig now. It's kind of sad. But that's just the fast pace and there's so much stuff now. How many superhero films come out every year? It's a dozen. You know, when I was a kid, it was Superman would come out and then you'd wait 2 years for Superman 2 or whatever. You know, it was a totally different world. I think with Detours, if it had come out at the time... And it did, I think it did totally get caught up in that whole Disney sale thing. And I get, you've just said it, I get why they said, oh, actually, this is kind of not what we want to do.
It's not on brand, is it? Not a message.
Yeah. That was a Lucasfilm and Fox kind of thing, doing Family Guy or doing, you know, the other things. But Detours, I think it fell between more than two stalls and kind of got caught in that crossfire to the same degree that Lucasfilm decided to cancel The Clone Wars because it was with Cartoon Network, which is part of Warner Brothers. That was just too tricky a deal to make, so it's just easy just to stop it. And then they've been able to now, because rights and licenses, which is just such a huge part of everything, and it's alluded to in the question. Years later down the line, it's like, oh, actually, we can pick that up now and finish it off. It's a tough one. I'd have loved to have seen it. I really would love to have seen it. I love the clips I saw of it. And I was at that panel that's referred to, you know, with Lucas and Seth Green. It was really fun, and everyone was looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember seeing clips online of a panel. It was made by people, a bit like Seth MacFarlane, Matt. It was made by people who grew up loving Star Wars. It's kind of no different in some respects to like fanboys, and it's no different to the Robot Chicken sketches, which I think something like that is a lot more easy to digest. You get maybe like a couple sketches in an episode, or then they do like a special and stuff like that. And at least with Robot Chicken, there's observations about the fandom as well. You know, there's that one sketch of Lucas being pursued by fan through like a San Diego Comic-Con and stuff. We've had Freemaker Adventures, and we've had all those Lego Star Wars specials, which obviously they don't poke fun at Star Wars, but they're, you know, they're still not.
They have fun with it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, it's having fun with it. And I suppose, depending on what the jokes were, like what the satirical aspect of Detours was, and bearing in mind Lucas was quite politically outspoken and likes to use Star Wars as a vehicle for political commentary, it might just be something that even Disney probably weren't comfortable with.
When Lucasfilm made Detours, they were still independent Lucasfilm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's different considerations to take into account when you've got shareholders. Every measure of what you do is different. Lucasfilm becomes part of something else, and Disney, I think, are very careful about that sort of political. So if that's the route they went down, it's not like they were doing Spitting Image or anything, which incidentally is coming back. But you know, you think if Detours had have come out and they'd have done a few episodes, maybe it would have caught on, and they go, let's do 6 episodes of a year. And it does sort of start, you know, as you get to the Trump years, for example, and certain people want to make a comment, they want to make some sort of commentary. They've been on for 4 or 5 years and they're confident and comfortable in the fact that they can probably do that. Is that the direction that you'd want to take Star Wars in? So I think poking fun at the OT, because it's pretty bulletproof now. It still makes money. They still make merch. And we were talking about it earlier, you know, the Hot Toys are celebrating Empire 40th, and there's a load of Empire figures coming out at pace, you know, which is great because the interest is still there across the fan. It's not just the older collectors who were there the first time. It's the general Star Wars populace are collecting and are interested in it. Star Wars, Empire, Jedi, pretty bulletproof. You're not going to take them down now. The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, very well respected, increasingly so. But I think if you'd got Detours now, let's say it had carried on and they'd have gone past the OT, and let's start talking about the prequel trilogy, because we know people love it and they're familiar enough with it that we can do silly Dexter jokes and we can do silly Luminara Unduli jokes or whatever you want to do. Pick a character, Jocasta Nu in the library and telling everyone to shush or whatever, you know, silly stuff. And they get through that and they manage to do it. You get to the current era and you think, well, it's such a weaponized environment now with Star Wars. Detours is still on in 2020, and they go, right, let's start having a bit of fun with the sequel trilogy. I think that would have gone down like a lead balloon. It's a weird situation. And going back to Greg's question, I think it would work. It works better with Trek in the sense that, that right now there's so much Trek out and so much coming, you know, so much coming. Because they've decided to choose to do a next generation kind of era thing, they've got a lovely smorgasbord of characters and planets, and you know, there's a Q cameo and there's a DS9 flashback scene and there's all sorts of stuff they can just drop in, and you just know they've already said season 2's coming. So you just know you'll start hearing more familiar actors because Picard's got different people coming back for season 2, and you'll see more next gen characters and maybe DS9 characters, and there's lots of stuff they can do. It's not the best comparison, but it's the most obvious comparison. But I think Detours, Lucas had carried on as it was and they'd not been sold to Disney. I think, Detours would found a network and
found a place. Would have probably got maybe 2, maybe 3 seasons, I think, out of it, I think, quite easily. And correct me if I'm wrong, the only Disney era spoof of Star Wars was the Phineas and Ferb episode. And that was actually really well done. That was kind of a bit of a vehicle to try and get the younger audience to start talking about Star Wars a bit, was to try and, you know, find ways to get the young audience to get their mums and their dads to go back to a cinema and take their kids.
I also think there's a difference, though, in the... I don't want to go too far down this line of thinking because I know people do get twitchy about it, but there was Lucasfilm Independent Company based in Marin County, California, and then there's Lucasfilm, a division of Disney. They're the same name, a lot of the same people, but it is a different ethos and a different way of looking at it. I think Lucasfilm's idea of pitching to younger kids probably didn't quite as much include doing young readers' versions or doing kids-related stuff, in the sense that, you know, when Star Wars came out, there was just Star Wars. And if you were 7 or 17 or 70, you were all watching the same thing. And like watching The Simpsons, the kids like the slapstick, the adults get the jokes. There's enough in there for everyone. And I think Lucasfilm let younger kids soak it up in their own way almost, whereas now there's a tendency to let's retell Star Wars for 6-year-olds and then write it as if it's been written for a 6-year-old, whereas 6-year-olds back in the day just read the book. You know what I mean?
So I think totally,
the older Lucasfilm would have done something like Detours and just put it out there. Whereas I think Disney, there's loads of little animated things, obviously Forces of Destiny, Galaxy of Adventures. I love Galaxy of Adventures. You know, and all these little things that have come out that are more pitched to kids. Whereas before, they would just put the story out and kids would gravitate to it themselves. It's almost like there's a hunger to, we're gonna package this and this is for you, you know? Whereas before it wasn't. It was like, this is for all of you. Dig in, everyone. I could sit next to a 10-year-old kid at a Star Wars convention, just have a little chit-chat about exactly the same thing. Whereas now there's more likelihood that he'll go, have you seen the latest, I don't know, Forces of Destiny? I'll go, nah, it's not really my thing. You know what I mean? It's before it was just out there for everyone. So I think Detours, if it had have come out and found a home, probably a physical format at some point, you know, it would have been for all of us to joke about. And the younger kids that don't get the jokes, I think when you're a kid, it's almost fun to not get the jokes because then you've got to figure out what the joke is. It's like toys, you know, back then when we were kids, we made all the noises. Now, where's the button to make the noise? It's a different way of thinking about stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, then it gives you kind of rewatchability. So then when you do go back, like in 6 or 7 years' time, you go, oh, so that's what they meant.
It's its own little payoff, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, you can like, I've waited 6 years to understand that joke.
Well, thank you, Greg, for sending that question in. That was a really good question. I'm glad we finally got around to talking about it. Because, again, I'd love Detours to come out. I want the holiday special to come out. Anything that's not out, Ewoks and Droids, get them done.
Stick
get
it on Disney Plus, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, we all want to see it, yeah.
So that was a cracking question from Greg, and also brings to a close episode 55. So if you were like Greg and you had a question that you want to ask, or you've got an opinion you want to kind of put forward, you can do that by these means.
Well, if you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit fanthatracks.com or check out the Fanthatracks app. Highly recommended, awesome app, should be winning awards in the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions, just like Greg did, by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at Fanthatracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, please leave a 5-star one, we want loads, just get them in, on Amazon Music, we're now on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the Fanthatracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Episode 55 is in the can, and we're going to speak again next week, hopefully.
Absolutely, mate, you take care, and everybody else, keep on trekking.
Coming up next on Fanthatracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.